I have been looking to do a show on end times events, and a couple of weeks ago when I had Stan Deo on and we were talking about some world calamities, he had mentioned that Holly was wrapping up and has a book out called Prophetic Perils, and I said, Stan, we got to get her on. And so Tom and Lisa and Holly have put together the date, and it is now. It is tonight. This is a huge book. It's 536 pages. It's called Prophetic Perils, End Time Events Revealed. It's an amazing story, and we're going to get right into it with Holly in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast. Holly Drennan Dale graduated from the University of Missouri, this one in Kansas City, with a Bachelor of Arts degree in English and other studies in sociology and geology. Now, while living in Australia with her husband Stan, she wrote a weekly newsletter for 5 years called Building Community, covering disruptive geophysical events and how to prepare for them. She's got several books, including Dare to Prepare, of course, Prudent Places USA, Prophetic Perils, End Time Events Revealed. And Holly, welcome. I'm glad you're here.
George, thank you so much for having me. Gee whiz, it's great to be back with you again.
This book is huge, 536 pages.
Yeah, there's no small print, or there is small print, and no wide margin. And it started because I was doing news for 15 years and also was a news junkie, and it was impossible not to see how things changed over these times. Some better, some not. And then add to that reading prophecy from lots of sources since about age 13. The pairing was a natural and ended up as Prophetic Perils.
And Holly, I got to tell you, your penmanship has got to be as good as anything I've ever seen with your little note to me on the inside. Did you go to school for that? Are you a calligrapher? What is that?
Oh, for heaven's sake. Since the computers, I hardly ever write by pen anymore. And most of the time, it kind of looks like chicken scratching. But with those calligraphy pens, you can cheat a little bit. It looks better than normal.
All right. Hey, Polly, I'm going to have, while I'm on the air, I'm going to have Tom call you right back and try to get a better connection with you, okay?
Okay.
So I'm going to hang up with you. I'm going to do a little song and dance here about prophetic perils. He's going to call you, and we're going to get you right back on. There's just a little tiny little buzz in the background, and I want to make this as perfect as we can here as we talk about prophecy and signs. That's the other important thing. I am very spiritual. I'm not that really, really religious, but I'm into end times prophecy and all this other great stuff. So I'm looking forward to this. So Holly, let's get you back here and see how this is. Hello there.
Okay, George, is this better?
Yeah, that sounds a little better.
Excellent.
Super. So I was saying that I'm into end times prophecy, and you have studied this, and I know Stan has for a long, long time. Are you convinced that with the signs that you're seeing right now, that we're right in the middle of all this?
We are leading up to it. That's really kind of way down our conversation, but let me just touch on this a bit right now. God always wants people to know where they're at. He doesn't want them in the dark. So he has given us signs throughout the Bible about end times. And the reason Prophetic Perils is based on Scripture is out of 2,500 biblical prophecies, 2,000 have already come true to the letter. They've already come to pass. That leaves about 500, and those basically have to do with end times, including the 7-year tribulation. This guy, he's a Canadian astrophysicist. His name is Hugh Ross. He calculated the odds of this type of accuracy at 1 in 10 to the 2,000th.
Whoa.
That's 10 with 2,000 zeros after it. There is not even a word for how big that is. So when you have this kind of accuracy, that says to me, this is where you've got to look for the clues about where we are. And that's what Prophetic Perils is about. It's not about the 7-year tribulation, because a lot of people have already written about that and done it, very well. But I want people to know about what we're about to face, and you pair that up with current events, and it's really unmistakable.
The other books on prophecy, of course, pull right out of the book of Revelation and they back into it that way. You didn't do it like that, did you?
No, because the signs are all over the place in Bible. They're in lots of different books. They're in the Gospels, they're in Isaiah, of course, Revelation, and Joel, and a few others. So you can't just look at Revelation. That's really the really bad stuff that starts, and that's what we're not going to look at tonight.
Let's look at some of the signs that you have, what we call prophetic clues, and things that you have focused on. What's out there?
Okay, well, there's six groups, and then there's a lot of signs within each of those groups, but you can break them out basically into these six areas of signs in society. It's how people are behaving, what they think about, you know, what they're doing. Then you have signs in nature. That includes a whole raft of stuff like earth changes, things in the heavens going on, bioweapons, famines, all things to do with nature. Then there are world events, which is pretty self-explanatory, as is things that are in the technology area. Then there's spiritual signs. Then the last biggie is things that are going on with Israel.
Wow. Okay, we've had earthquakes. We've had volcanoes happen before. We, you know, Mount St. Helens, we've had big earthquakes, Fukushima. Why is it different now? What's happening?
Well, it's a matter of degree. For signposts, they've always been around, as what you were just saying, but it's how they're ramping up those birth pangs, and I think as Art Bell used to call it, the quickening.
Yeah.
That's the point, how things are getting closer together. But whatever you want to call it, the events are speeding up, they're becoming more violent and closer together. You take earthquakes, for example. I gave your webmasters a graph there that shows deadly and destructive earthquakes. These are big, big events. To qualify, they have to do at least one of four things, which on the graph, you know, folks can look at that because there's a little inset up there. They have to hit at least a 7.5 on the Richter scale, or create a tsunami, or kill at least 10 people, or cause at least $1 million in damages. These quakes are so big, they're big enough to be picked up all around the world, and they can't be fluffed off as a mine explosion or a methane burp. So on this graph, if you look at this thing, it's the very top one there. It charts all of these destructive and deadly quakes since 1950 up through 2014. Backing off in the 1950, there were just 22 of these guys. 6 decades later, they've tripled. And this is from an arm of NOAA. It's called National Geophysical Data Center. And they have a database of over 5,500 of these temblors. Now, if you look at this graph there, you can see there's a steady uphill climb, but they have done something kind of funny starting about 1970. There are definite spikes every 20 years. So the first one hit about 1970, then you've got another one about 1990. Then they got more violent and closer together. After 1990, the next one came in 2002, and then boom, you've got another one in 2008. And they are way up there. So you can see how everything is climbing and getting stronger.
And are these signs, Holly, tied into what you would, and we'd all call biblical prophecy? Is that the tie-in?
Yeah, that's what all of these are. I'm not going to give all the Bible verses.
Right.
That's kind of, you know, boring. But it is in the book, so people can look it up themselves, and they can say, oh, yeah, this is what this is talking about here. But, you know, one other interesting thing there, in 2014, the Wall Street Journal published an article, and they quoted USGS admitting that earthquakes in the central U.S., you know, where the New Madrid area is, and then also in the eastern U.S. places that don't see these quakes nearly as often as, say, the Ring of Fire, those quakes have quintupled recently compared to 30 years leading up to 2000. So those have gotten busy over there, too. And that's a good bet, George, why FEMA requested those 140 million MREs for Madrid. That was in 2011. and their requisition stated right on it, earmarked to feed, quote, a survivor population of 7 million.
Oh, wow. Gosh, it seems like everything's coming at us, Holly, from every different angle. We'll get into Israel and world events a little bit later on when we've got you, because that's the key to, I think, all of this. You also say that there are signs in the skies, so it's not just earthbound events.
Yeah. And also, let me share something with you before we get right to that about volcanoes, because earthquakes and volcanoes, they're kind of like twin sisters there. Earthquakes, you know, can make volcanoes pop off. And these guys have shown another rise just very similar to earthquakes. And we can trace those guys back to 1855, especially for the larger explosions. Now, just as a little background, Earth has got about 1,500 active volcanoes, and get this, 14 potentially active supervolcanoes.
And supervolcanoes, like the caldera at Yellowstone,
yes, exactly,
can be devastating.
Oh,
devastating.
Yeah, that could be a very bad day.
They're planet killers, aren't they?
They are, and guess, you know, you would think that scientists would have, you know, everything understood and discovered about them by now, but they're making new discoveries still every year. This one just blew my mind. At the end of 2013, they found that the magma chamber under Yellowstone is 2.5 times larger than what they thought. So this lava pit is really 55 miles long, 20 miles wide, and 6 miles deep. It's filling up every day with more lava, and right now, it's got enough lava right in it now to equal the greatest ever explosion. But that wasn't all. Then just last year, the seismologists at the University of Utah, they made another huge discovery. For years, you know, scientists couldn't figure out why more carbon dioxide was coming out of Yellowstone than what that big lava chamber could account for. So they discovered a second reservoir under the 55-mile-long one. Get this, 4.5 times bigger.
Mm.
So if you put this into perspective, those two chambers, they could fill the Grand Canyon 14 times with their magma.
When these prophecies were written in the Bible, a long, long time ago, I mean, I know your answer is going to probably be because it was God's word, but I mean, how would they know what's happening now with these signs?
Well, as I said in the opening there, and you know, you're right on what you said, it's God's word, but he wanted us to know the signs of the times when Jesus is coming back. This is the whole ball of wax right there. And he wants you to know, so he gave specific things that were unmistakable, things that everybody can see, things that can't be tweaked by, say, seismologists, you know, brush these big earthquakes under, you know, the rug or erase them off of the charts. These are things that are unmistakable signs.
And now the signs in the skies, of course. You know, we're seeing all kinds of strange things happening. New discoveries, meteors, an explosion over Russia 1.5, 2 years ago, funny things over the dome in the Middle East. What do these signs mean?
Well, there's some really cool signs out there. I mean, everything is not just, you know, dim and dismal. But you know about the four blood moons that just completed
right.
September of this last year.
That was actually pretty fascinating.
It was fabulous, wasn't it? But anyway, it was even more special than that because they were actually what they called biblical tetrads. That meant that the four blood moons actually landed on Jewish feasts. So that made it definitely unusual. And then it also coincided with Shemitah and Jubilee year.
Mm-hmm.
So as a refresher, I know you've had a couple of guests on that have discussed this, so I won't go in great detail. But as I said before here, these four blood moons were extra special because they landed on Jewish feasts, making them biblical tetrads. And then this, in the last 2,100 years, has only happened 8 times since Jesus was crucified.
That's it?
That's it. 8 times. To be biblical tetrads is only happened 8 times, and the next one won't happen again for almost 600 years. That's how rare these are. So anyway, in with all of these biblical tetrads was a Shemitah year. That happens every 7 years, and it's a Jewish tradition where normally they don't plant their fields.
And it's an economic disaster.
It is. And debts are forgiven. And normally, as you just said, they bring about a disaster in the financial realm about a year, either side of the Shemitah year. And the 5 greatest economic crashes of the last 40 years all came on Shemitah.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. And that, for some reason, that 7-year cycle,
I know,
just
weird,
keeps, it is weird. It really
anyway,
is.
Anyway, I know a couple of your guests have talked about this, Jonathan Kahn and Mark Biltz, and then also 2 other guys that have written about it that are pastors, John Hagee and Bill Salas.
Yes.
But I've only ever heard Jonathan Kahn follow up with what actually happened in the financial community, because it was significant. There are 6 things, and then the whammy I'll tell you about in just a minute. Anyway, the British, French, and German markets, they lost 16, 18, and 25% respectively off their markets. The Indian and Brazilian markets, they lost 4,000 and 12,000 points.
God.
The U.S. markets lost, get this, $2 trillion. You didn't hear about all this.
God, you don't know. They hide that from us, don't they?
And then the world financial realm lost a total of $11 trillion. And, you know, just going back to the first of this year, the first 3 weeks of January, the Dow dropped nearly 10%, though it's obviously recovered nicely. That was the worst year's launch since the Great Depression. And then the last thing was that China's yuan plunged so badly that they had to stop stock market from trading twice. Now, those were kind of the fun parts of this. The next thing really is not. It's a big heads up, and it continues today. These other things have recovered, but at the World Economic Forum there in Davos in January, this fellow, his name is William White. He was a former chief economist of the Bank of International Settlements. He had a big warning. I'm going to give you the direct quote that he gave. These are his words. The situation is worse than it was in 2007. Our ammunition to fight the downturns, I just flipped my page here. The ammunition to fight the downturns here is essentially all used up. Debts have continued to build up over the last 8 years, and they have reached such levels in every part of the world that they have become a potent cause for mischief. It will become obvious in the next recession, and this will be uncomfortable for a lot of people who think they own assets that are worth something. Things are so bad, there is no right answer. Now, his last sentence here is the kicker. The only question is whether we are able to look reality in the eye and face what is coming in an orderly fashion, or whether it will be disorderly, end quote.
Well, you know what? He's spot on, too, because it could go either way. And I'm not sure our leaders, Holly, have the ability to do it in an orderly way. I think it'll be chaos.
Not only that, people are going to freak when, you know, they look in their wallet and, you know, their dollar is now worth, what, 5 cents?
If they have the dollar, if it's not been confiscated by a bank.
Yeah, that's the next thing, because, you know, when they talk about disorderly fashion, this kind of makes your mind wander off into martial law.
That's true. Holly, stay with us. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. Prophetic Perils. Incredible deal, by the way. Just for you, 25% discount on all their books, DVDs, and CDs, and you can get it at their website, which is, of course, linked up at coasttocoastam.com, daretoprepare.com, or standdeo.com. And welcome back to Coast Next Hour. We'll take phone calls with you as we talk with Holly Deo about prophetic perils. Amazing story and a great book, by the way. And again, they will give you a huge discount on all their works. Just go to their website at coasttocoastam.com. It's all linked up for you. And welcome back to Coast, Holly Deo with us. Holly, let's get into some of the other aspects of your work, prophetic perils. And you talk about famines that are also tied into end times. Let's talk about that. What have you found?
Okay. Can I insert one thing about Coast Insider?
Yeah.
I have listened every night to Coast since 1994, and I was so grateful when you guys put that Coast Insider up, because sometimes you doze off, and I get up at 4 to 5 o'clock every morning, and to stay up until 3, which is when you guys go off air here, sometimes I just can't quite make it and then get up. So Coast Insider has been a lifesaver for me, and I use it every single day.
Well, great. Thanks. It's been a great aspect of the program, to be sure.
Yeah, it is. And then also, to get your 25% off discount on everything they need to put in on the shopping cart there, George 2016. And that gives them the discount off of everything there.
Okay, super.
Okay. Now, you wanted to talk about the
famine
thing. Yeah. Yeah, that is a huge, huge sign. It is spoken of throughout the Bible there. And, I mean, more than earthquakes, more than the disasters, more than anything. And that is, again, one of the nature signs there. There are a number of things that could bring about famine. It doesn't have to be just one factor, and it likely will be a convergence of events. Like, you know, you can have a super volcano go off, or just even a number of normal-sized volcanoes. That's entirely possible, because they can block the sun, and then when the ash blows out, they can smother crops. So that could be one thing. And this has been predicted for some time to happen up in the Cascadia mountain range. Those stretch from Washington State down through the northern part there of California. This sounds like even a more possibility there, because when scientists released information this past July, they are now expecting a 9.2 earthquake to hit the Pacific Northwest. Your frequent guest and physicist Michio Kaku said about this very event on Fox News, these are his words here, quote, "The Cascadia Fault is an earthquake waiting to happen. We know it's going to happen with an energy 30 times the maximum energy of the San Andreas Fault," end quote. Jeez. Now, for a tremor that massive, it's going to trigger volcanoes in this whole area there. It only took a 5.1 to activate Mount St. Helens, and Professor Kaku says that Hollywood has brainwashed people into making them think that California is where the next big quake's going to hit, but he strongly feels it's going to be the Cascadia area.
Just what we need.
Well, we don't want that for sure, but it's something to keep your eye on over there. But back to famines, most of them throughout history have been caused by either war or drought. And the Hopi shared with Stan when we were invited down to Hopi Land in 96, that their prophecy says there will be another civil war coming to America. It's going to pit different races against races and religions against religions. If you look at today's headlines, this is not a far stretch when you see how much division is in this country right now. I mean, it's worse than I can remember at any point in time.
Holly, the New World Order, that's also another possibility that could be out there.
Absolutely. Oh, boy, is there a lot in that area. Lots of things going on there. It's spoken of in both Daniel and Revelation, these books in the Bible. In Daniel, it talks about a new kingdom that's going to rise to devour, their word, the world and crush it, and that everything will be under his control, and his is meaning the Antichrist. Then in Revelation 13, it describes pretty much the same thing. Specifically in verse 7, it says he's given authority over every tribe, people, language, and nation. In other words, that means he rules every person in every country. Now, like with prophesied disasters in Matthew, there are beheadings prophesied in Revelation. Of course, we know what's going on with ISIS. The overall moral decline of countries, that's prophesied in Matthew and Timothy. We have increased violence and lawlessness. I mean, look what's happening in our big cities with all the homicides that have increased at least 50% last year. And also then you've got the ramping up of drug use, as prophesied in Timothy and Luke. And heroin and prescription drugs, those are at epidemic levels. All these things, and a lot more signs that, you know, we're not going to have time to get into, are all escalating. But back to the New World Order, these pieces have been sliding into place for the last 70 years, starting with the formation of the UN in 1945. It actually goes back to about 1900, but back then it didn't have wings, and now it's got blowtorches. In Prophetic Perils, it has four pages of quotes from 25 world leaders, popes, presidents going back to Nixon, VPs, billionaires, financiers, and people in places of power. All these guys have specifically called for a new world order using those words in speeches. So they've been quietly planting the seed. We've been tooling along doing what our, you know, whatever we are doing in life. And in the meantime, in the background, they have been getting things shaping up for that. Now, this is manifesting in a number of areas here, things that we can see happening in the news, George, all the time. Here's one right here, a push for no borders. Look where that got the EU. They are overrun with the immigrants, and you know, that's caused heaps of trouble over there to the point where some of the countries are putting their physical borders back up again. And while Trump, you know, he wants to build that border on the southern side there, Mexico, just 2 weeks ago, is calling for more integration with America. So that kind of brings us around to the North American Union. You don't hear as much about that right now, but it's still there in place. It's just more under the radar because so many people got up in arms about that. That's, you know, just for people that aren't aware, that is supposed to meld Canada, the U.S., and Mexico, kind of like the European Union. But the only country that wants that is Mexico because their peso is in the toilet. Oops. Their peso is 18 cents to the U.S. dollar. So, you know, why wouldn't they want to be connected with us? And Canada doesn't want it because they don't want to take on America's dramas. And again, Americans don't want it because we don't want our economy further burdened by, you know, Mexico's poor situation. So that's not all that's going on with the New World Order. You've got the push there with this TPP, and there are no less, get this, than 20 trade agreements and money unions in place that tie countries around the world together. So we're getting this financial noose around countries here that are, they're very hard to get out of. You have the deliberate watering down of countries defining attributes by massive immigration, legal's fine, illegal, not so fine. And, you know, it's watering down people's cultures, their religious tendencies, their ethnicity. You're seeing that over there in Europe, and you're seeing it here in the U.S. And we also have a trend now toward revisionism. That rewrites history decades later, saying stuff happened one way when it really happened another, just to make everything more homogenous and more PC. And that's another thing that's popping up now, is this big trend toward being politically correct in everything. And it's really to make Americans more palatable to the rest of the world. But probably the two biggest things, George, that's going on here, we have World Heritage sites all over the world. There's at least 1,000 of these, and 23 of these World Heritage sites are in America. That's pretty remarkable when you think how young our country is, because like Italy has 51 and France has got 45. The reason this is a problem here is because anytime the UN sticks their nose into our business, there's always the question of property rights being in jeopardy, especially in areas that surround these World Heritage sites. And then another thing, they're MAB sites. That means man and biosphere. These are also worldwide, and they're in 120 countries. We've got 47 of these in the U.S. Now, if you've got a site here that has been so designated around this particular site, and these, mind you, they go for miles, there is a buffer zone, and then around that is a transition zone. Well, some of these just kind of got designated in the last 15 or 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people were already living in these areas. So what happens to their land? What happens to their property when the UN's got their finger in the pie here? So that's an issue right there. That has been on people's mind. Of course, the UN says, we're not going to bother your property. You can still live there. But who knows what's going to happen, especially, in the light of, these ICLEI cities. Now, I know you had a gal on there that went into great detail on the ICLEI cities, but there's a lot more that's come out since she was on. And ICLEI stands for International Council for Local Environment Initiatives. So they gets abbreviated down to ICLEI. In 2012, they had a map on their site.
Get a little water there, Holly.
Yeah, I'll need to do that. They had a map that showed participating cities, and it's in prophetic perils there. It shows where 9,000 of these cities are worldwide. But since then, they're not keeping their map up because they had 10,000 cities fully on board with Agenda 21, and they kind of ran out of space. So they quit keeping it up. And now also on their site, they're keeping it very quiet. Instead of the cities, which I've listed in Prophetic Perils there, they now just say, okay, Colorado's got 20, and New York has got 40, and California's got 117. So you can't really tell who is an ICLEI city unless you, check your own city or somebody else's city and put in one of the 80-some terms that they are using to designate these areas. And what these ICLEI cities are is places that are on board with Agenda 21, except that that's what ICLEI calls it, but obviously it's now Agenda 2030. But the goal is the same. It's just worse, and it's more intrusive. But they got smart in using their terminology. You remember how global warming took on such a big stink and,
mm-hmm.
and it morphed into climate change?
That's right.
Well, now they're using 80 different phrases to indicate the same thing, but they're really vague or innocuous. I mean, you wouldn't know what you were reading unless you delved into it. Something like public-private partnerships and bioregional, that doesn't tell you squat. But that it is all the same thing, and it looks really, really nice on paper. They're wanting to make your communities greener and more bike-friendly and use, renewables. But the goal is really to get people off of their normal-sized lots and squeeze them onto pint-sized properties, or better yet, into huge apartment complexes, because they want to return a lot of that other ground to nature. That's the good side. But the negative part of this is that when people are crammed together in smaller places, they're easier to control. When you're spread out all over every place, it's like, gathering marbles in. It's much better if they're in one tidy little bag. The other thing is, too, it makes you more dependent for food. We kind of got off the subject here of famine because there's a lot to that. But, you know, if you're in an apartment complex, it's really hard to have self-sustaining food like your gardens. So
Exactly.
You control the food, you control the people.
And with this new world order, that I want to get into the Israel and world events, because that's the, I think, the final key to all of this.
You're right.
That, do they really want the world's population from 7 billion down to 300 million, in your opinion?
Well, that's what I hear. And I tell you, you know, the things that you see in the news, George, I tell you, it really does look like that, because this present presidential administration has done everything to kill our country. And America out there is the biggest dog on the block. You know, we are more independent. We have our weapons. We are the can-do people. And, you know, you've got to cut the legs off of that attitude if you want to control people. You know, they are not hardening our grid, and that is probably one of the most offensive things they are doing.
And it's easy to do.
Easy. 2 billion would fix it. Do you realize that is less than 2% of what we spend on illegal immigrants and the amnesty people every single year? Less than 2%.
Yeah.
Pocket change.
Aside from an EMP, we're going to get hit with a solar flare. That's going to be a big one. We're going to be directly in relationship to the sun, and it's going to take us. It's going to take us out.
George, I could tell you a few things on the sun that William Fortune didn't have time to share. This is a crisis waiting to happen. Not like, you know, maybe if. There is a fellow here that his name is Pete Riley. And he's a physicist with Predictive Sciences. He published a paper over 2 years ago in Space Weather called On the Probability of Occurrence of Extreme Space Weather Events. He analyzed the records of solar storms going back 50 years, and he looked at the frequency of just your ordinary solar storms up through the really extreme things. He calculated the odds of a Carrington-type event hitting Earth in a decade, 10 years, he determined that likelihood is about 1 in 8.
That's pretty darn close, Holly.
That's too close.
That is too close for comfort.
Yeah, the sun, we've had several near misses. You know, obviously in, you know, 1859, you know, we weren't around for the Carrington event. We weren't all electrified here. But, you know, people were getting caught on fire that were sitting in those telegraph stations. You know, that was pretty significant. But we had a near miss in 1921 that scientists says was 10 times more powerful than the Carrington event, 10 times more. And they estimate that if the Carrington happened today, it would take 4 to 10 years to recover from that. Imagine one 10 times stronger. Then we had another one just a couple of years ago in July of 2012, they said was at least as strong as at Carrington. When I say these are near misses, the sun, when it shot off the flare, had pointed, had rotated, you know, as a direct hit just a couple of days past Earth, so it didn't get us. But I tell you, you know, we are waiting to get clobbered, but probably the most significant thing a lot of people have not discussed, and that happened just in 2003. There's a NASA scientist. He edits Space Weather. I'm sure you go there all the time.
Yeah, I do. That's a great source. Hold on, Holly. We're at the top of the hour. We'll come back and talk more. We'll get into Israel and world events, and we'll take calls on Coast to Coast AM.